chickens in the houses, they got chickens in the trees, chicken in the pots, the motto of the Petaloomies. Out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay? Now Marvin got me started, sold me my first hen. Now I got 4 and 20, and 24 more again. I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay? Chicken in the morning, it's chicken in the night. Weren't for chicken, Petaluma never would have reached its height. I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay?
Good evening, and welcome to Mouthful, smart talk about food, wine, and farming here in Sonoma County, the North Bay, and beyond. It's Michelle and Jordan. Hope you have been having a pleasant weekend. The extreme heat wave that I thought we were going into didn't happen. That made me really happy. I was at the Healdsburg Farmers Market yesterday, and I have to say, tomato season is already in full swing. And what is this? June 12th. And there are lots of tomatoes, from little sweet 100s to big slicers. I know sometimes we haven't had local tomatoes till the beginning of August, so very early season this year. And oh, I forgot what I was going to say. Okay, that's what happens when you take a late afternoon nap. My guest today, somebody I've wanted to have on Mouthful for a long time. He grows one of the finest, or some of the finest, I should say, salad mixes around that you will ever taste. And they are not just delicious, they are gorgeous to the eye as well. It is Farmer George Macros of Earthworker Farm. Thanks so much for taking time to be here.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
And we've got Chelsea Cushman as well.
Hi.
And you work with the farm.
I do.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do markets. I harvest flowers on the weekend, Friday and Saturday. Uh-huh. And I also do field work during the week.
Okay, great. Well, let's start with George talking about where exactly is the farm.
It's in western Sebastopol on Barnett Valley Road, and we're overlooking the Freestone Valley. So we're at about 550 feet elevation and two hillsides from the ocean.
Oh, nice. So you're getting that, we've talked about this a little bit, you're getting that briny sea breeze.
We are, yeah. And it's a really great climate to grow greens. It's not too cold in the winter, and it's not too hot in the mm-hmm. summer. And it's excellent soil and just a great place to be.
And how many acres or half
three
acre?
Quarter acre.
Three quarter acre. Mm-hmm. And you attend two markets or three markets?
Two markets. Uh-huh. Santa Rosa Original Certified on Saturday, mm-hmm. and then Sebastopol on Sunday. Mm-hmm. And three quarter acre is definitely enough to keep us busy. We don't use any tractors or heavy machinery, so it's all large scale gardening and hand tools. So for that scale and that approach, it definitely keeps us busy.
Mm-hmm. When did you found the farm?
Basically late 2006.
Okay.
And I started using that location as a main production site in 2011. And I've been there since summer of 2011. So 5 years now.
At that location. And you know, you have these delicate, beautiful mixes with lots of flowers and herbs and things you don't necessarily see. What's the source of your inspiration? How did you come by your signature blends?
Well, I really like to grow everything. And what I did find is that based on the coastal location where I'm at, greens really do excel. And I was originally inspired by Sangley Farms in Long Island, New York. And they
what's
had
the name of that farm again?
Sangley Farms.
Sangley,
and they
okay.
had a edible flower mix that I tried in college. And that basically made me excited to eat salads. Before that, I grew up eating blue cheese and iceberg lettuce salads, and those were delicious. But after having this spring mix with edible flowers, it really inspired me to eat salads. And so that's how I got the idea and how I got into it. And it's a work in progress. These mixes are different every week, and we're always trying new flowers.
Is it possible to say how many different things you are growing? Or is there just too many to count?
As far as flowers, it's about up to 25 different species of edible flowers and multiple varieties of each. So there's quite an array, and I brought in a sample for you to look at, try.
Yeah, they're big. And then there's some greens in there, a lot of greens in there as well. I recognize some I don't. So about how many greens in addition to the flowers themselves?
Well, right now the greens aren't very diverse, and that's another story. I started saving my own seed for microgreen seed, and so I've always experimented with a lot of different microgreen varieties, and I started saving seed from a variety of dwarf bok choy, and what I found is that the difference between buying different types of seed and saving the seed that was pollinated and set and grown on this farm, they just started dominating on the farm. And so this mild mix, also known as the Dr. Seuss artisan mix, is mainly bok choy's now, because we grow the seed on the farm, and it performs best on the farm. It performs better than any other types of varieties, and it's sweet and crunchy, and there's not really a need to try and do too many other greens now, especially for this mix. We have other types of mixes, but for the mild or sweet and crunchy mix, it's just the bonsai bok choy that's been dominating.
And then I noticed recently, you said the Dr. Seuss mix, you've added these names. I saw the Frida Kahlo, Dr. Seuss, I can't remember if there's a third.
There's a Claude Monet,
and
then a Mark Twain with a G on the end, and that's a fictitious historical figure.
Tell us about the Frida Kahlo.
The Frida Kahlo is a spicy mix, so spicy and peppery. It's micro arugula, micro mustards, and more brighter colors, large red nasturtiums and large red salvias. And a lot of people like that mix too.
I love that mix. I really
Thank
love
you.
That mix. And if I remember correctly, don't you sometimes have little cilantro?
That's in the Mark Twain mix.
Oh, okay.
And that's micro cilantro, leek grass.
Yes.
And then sometimes sheep sorrel and crystalline ice plant.
I think that one must be my favorite. I like them all, but I think that one with that leek grass is so good. Now, things like leek grass and micro cilantro, are those being grown in the ground, or are you doing them in the trays that you see people? Some people bring microgreen trays and clip off when people buy. So are you doing it in the ground?
Everything's in the ground.
Wow,
okay. And that's what's unique about our production, is that I started doing trays at the beginning, and then I transitioned to just growing in the ground, and that gives them a better flavor, a better vitality, and I just don't, I like having my hands in the earth. I don't like using potting mix and trays, and that's just my own unique production method.
Mm-hmm. And do you have environmental challenges there? I mean, do you have, as soon as you talk about planting in the ground, everyone in West County thinks about gophers, because we have a lot. But up where you are, 550 feet, are you bothered by gophers?
Yeah, basically the soil's like a New York City subway, and with gophers instead of large rats, so they're definitely there.
Yeah.
And all I can do is try to trap 3 to 5 a week, mm-hmm. year round, and keep them under control.
And does that say 3 to 5 a week? That seems to take care of the biggest part of the problem.
Just slowly chipping away at them, or rather maintaining a low population is all I can do.
Mm-hmm. On your website, and we should bring you in on this, Chelsea, on your website you talk about different harvesting methods, and I was very struck by that because it was so precise. You use a porcelain knife on certain things because you don't want to it to whatever you're cutting to come in contact with metal. Would y'all talk about that a little bit? I found that really interesting.
Well, the ceramic blade, and any questions about flower harvesting, you can address to my partner in grime here. Basically, I do most of the greens harvesting, and I use ceramic knives because they're sharper, they hold their blade longer, or rather hold their edge longer, and they don't oxidize the greens, so mm-hmm. the greens don't brown up on the cut edges as mm-hmm. as quickly. And that's basically, and I have a diamond sharpener, and I'm always sharpening mm-hmm. my blades. Maybe every half hour I'll sharpen my knife.
Uh-huh. What about you? What do you think about, tell me about harvesting.
Well, harvesting, basically getting together the right, we have an assortment of tubs that we use, some bigger, mm-hmm. some smaller, and really figuring out which tubs will be great for harvesting specific flowers. We have larger quantities of some more than others. Mm-hmm. There, like you said, we have about 25 different types of flowers.
Mm-hmm.
Don't really utilize the ceramic knife as much. I use more scissors. Some of okay. the flowers require, like the stalk, require scissors. The calendula we hand pick, and then also the hollyhocks require scissors also, because mm-hmm. they come in like these little pom-pom balls, mm-hmm. and kind of have to delicately snip them apart.
Yeah, in many instances, you're really separating the flower into individual petals.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not getting, you're not chomping on a rose in your salad. You're getting the really delicate petals. So it's really great that somebody's doing this. You know, there used to be an edible flower producer in Sebastopol. She mm-hmm. was on Martin Lane. I don't know if you've heard about her.
Mm-mm.
Her name will pop into my head in a minute. Mm-hmm. But she grew, it might have been exclusively flowers, and they were distributed, at that point it was in the late 80s and early 90s, she was distributing primarily to retail outlets. May have attended a farmer's market now and then, but mostly you would see trays of separate flowers. And,
oh, nice.
The property sold in... Let's see, after they left, it became Sisters Farm or Two Sisters Farm. I don't know if you...
I haven't heard of them. I mean, there's so many farms
Two Sisters,
I don't know about.
Yeah, Two Sisters had the best lettuce. Mm-hmm. For a time, we were so lettuce rich in Sebastopol. Mm-hmm. They grew a number of varieties, but one of the varieties they grew, which I don't think anyone has grown yet, is called Pirat, P-I-R-A-T, and it was the most tender, sweet, delicate butter lettuce you've ever had. And they moved away, sadly, because nobody has really... Now it takes like 3 or 4 different farms to fill the niche that they had while they were here.
Yeah, you can't go wrong growing lettuce. I mean, any farmer, any beginning farmer, one seed, one plug, $2 to $3 head per square foot every 6 weeks, you know, you... it's yeah, you really can't go wrong growing lettuce.
Mm-hmm. Now I want to go back to some of the greens. Let's start with the young cilantro. So you plant the seeds. And how do you sow them? If you're doing the microgreens, I just assume you're growing really close together. Do you mm-hmm. do sort of that scattering of the seed rather than individual seed planting?
Well, with the cilantro specifically, that's an a unique one because I'm doing it now on the ends of my beds. And so I make furrows, I scatter into the furrows, and I cover them up. But then I only harvest 50% of them as microgreens, and I let the rest grow up because the cilantro plant, once it blooms, it turns into one of the most effective beneficial attractants as far as flowers go. And so I let it go to flower, then I let it set seed, then I can get green coriander seed and use that as flavoring, and then I can also let it go to seed and save the coriander or cilantro seed. So it's a full multi-purpose plant at all stages of its life cycle. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm doing right now with the cilantro.
How do you stop the birds from eating it?
We use row cover
to
keep them out. And usually as far as dealing with pests, exclusion is the easiest way, a physical barrier to keep them out.
Mm-hmm. I planted cilantro this year. So excited when I had little sprouts and then they were gone. And my garden is very bird friendly, and I wouldn't do anything if I end up just growing bird food, fine, because I like the birds, but I love cilantro. We're going to take a little musical break here on Mouthful, and we'll be right back.
Sold the farm to take my woman where she longed to be. We left our kin and all our friends back there in Tennessee. Then I bought those one-way tickets she had often begged me for, and they took us to the streets of Baltimore. Baby walks the streets of Baltimore.
Graham Parsons, of course, Streets of Baltimore. Mouthful. So we have a bag of compost, right?
We do, yes.
Okay, tell me about that.
So this is a batch of compost that I've been working on, and a little bit of the background on this is that I'm trying to use the purest ingredients for production. And so this is year-old aged cow manure from a certified organic dairy, and it's seeded with red worms. So this is basically, you can smell it and you can smell the earthiness in
it. Smells that's what it smells like. It smells earthy.
And the fact that it doesn't have any ammonia or smell or any manure smells. Mm-hmm. And so currently organic regulations allow the use of conventional dairy manure in organic production. And so what this is directly using certified organic dairy manure from a certified organic dairy. So that means that they're not feeding any hormones or antibiotics, and all of their feed that they're using is certified organic. So it's taking the purity back a few steps in terms of where I'm getting my materials from. And also using the red worms allows an extra level of digestion. And the red worms also are real miracle workers. I mean, we call ourselves Earthworker Farm, but the way that these are earth workers really puts us to shame. And they eat all of it, and their castings have structure to them and a lot of beneficial microbes as well. So this is something we're trying to transition to exclusively our own on-site produced worm compost for all of our fertility. And it's hard to do. It takes a long time, and it takes a lot of material and a lot of work to sift, and we can't derive all of our fertility that way, but we are making an effort to transitioning to this type of fertility. So I think this speaks a lot about our operation, and it's something that we're definitely excited about.
Mm-hmm. Now, what do you do? Do you get deliveries of the manure from the dairy?
I do, yes. I get them from Shane Barlow, and his company is called Barlow Hauling, and I highly recommend him for any type of hauling needs. And he's really good at backing up and basically dumping out the manure into a good compost pile. So he'll get it from directly from the dairy, and he'll dump it out and then slowly pull up the truck and make these nice windrows of compost, and then I'll mulch them heavily. And I like to get them in late summer, early fall, and let them break down, and then I actually let some of the winter rains moisten them a bit.
Mm-hmm. What do you mulch them with?
I just cover them up with straw.
Okay.
And then once they get enough water, I cover them up again with a tarp to keep more rain out so they don't leach. But they do require a lot of moisture, because the pile's getting up to at least 180 degrees, and that evaporates a lot of water.
Mm-hmm. And then at what point do you introduce the red worms?
Once it cools down to stable, once it gets below 100 degrees, I'll introduce the worms so they don't get too hot.
Yeah. Well, and are you growing the worms as well, raising the worms?
I introduce them. I get them from Sonoma Valley Worm Farm.
Oh, yes.
And there's also native worms in the soil. I mean, if I leave a piece of straw or a leaf of straw or a piece of burlap down on the ground, I can pick it up a few weeks later and they'll just be red worms. So there is a pretty healthy native population, but I speed up the process by seeding them with some of the red worms.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Yeah, I have a worm box. And it sort of comes and goes in population. It got, forget if it was a really cold winter or a really hot summer. I think it was a really hot summer. And the worms seem to move out.
They'll definitely leave. They'll definitely go into the ground. Mm-hmm. Or.
Mine is raised, and it's on cement. But I know if you have a die, from what I've heard anyway, if you have a die-off, you can tell because of the aroma. And it never, my worm box never smelled bad, but all of a sudden there was a much smaller population than what there had been. Anyway, I love, earthworms are so interesting. You know what you say, you leave something on the ground and they find it and they take care of it.
Absolutely.
And, you know, there's that great book by Amy Stewart, I think it is, The Earth Moved. And it's all about earthworms.
Oh, cool.
And she talks about how we wouldn't be here if it wasn't for earthworms. Earthworms make the planet inhabitable. But, of course, we can say that about a number of creatures.
You know? Absolutely.
We might not be here if we didn't have bees either, which brings me to my next question, is your farm and bees. Do you have much of a bee population, or are you not growing your flowers to the maturity that they like?
There's definitely a lot of bees.
Okay, cool.
I have to wait to harvest the borage because they're all about the borage. And I notice in the morning they really like the nasturtiums. It seems like maybe they have their different areas that they like. But and there's also, is it a hive that we have in between the redwood trees?
We have a native, we have our own resident wild swarm that's been there for a few years.
Oh, nice.
It's in the crotch of the redwood trees, and we call it honey crotch. I don't know if I could say that on the air.
You can say that on the air. It's fine.
So we have swarms every year in the spring, just giant balls of bees everywhere. I mean,
when you say the swarms, is that native hive splitting off and forming new hives?
I think so.
Congratulations to you. That's great.
So we're bee crazy. We don't actually have any boxes or get any honey, but they're just everywhere.
They're happy
and
there.
On warm days, the farm itself, you can smell kind of like the beeswax and kind of propolis smell all over the farm. I mean, there are just bees everywhere.
How nice. That is great. And speaking of bees, I should tell you that June is Lavender Month in Sonoma County, and I think in general the North Bay, because June, of course, is when the lavender comes into its full bloom. And they, on I think it's the 25th and 26th of June, Matanzas Creek Winery, which had the first large planting of lavender, they're having their Days of Lavender, Days of Wine and Lavender. And at this time of year, if you walk through that area, it sounds like a plane ready to take off. The bees are so loud. And, you know, I'm allergic to bees. I am not worried about, they're so happy when they're around flowers like that, as long as you make sure one doesn't fly up your skirt or something. You know, they're not going to, they're just happy doing their bee, gathering their lavender and making the amazing lavender honey. So anyway, it's another thing about flowers at this time of year is it's Lavender Month, the month of June. When you were, you were in college on the East Coast?
Yes.
Did you know, did you have this in mind as a target, farming?
I didn't. I knew that I wanted to combine my love of nature with creativity and the arts. And this is funny, but my career counselor said I should become a golf course designer.
Oh, no.
He says that's the only, that's like what he recommended to me.
Wow.
And
I somehow just really can't see you doing that. Needless to say. So you really, you made it up on your own. Really. You do what you've done, you've, I can't think
kind
you
of
could follow in
stumbled
footsteps.
Into it.
How'd you end up here?
I took a road trip. I was originally a teacher in Brooklyn, and I was a science teacher, and I was lowest in seniority, and because of that, I was given a classroom nobody else wanted, and it had a greenhouse in it, and so I rehabilitated the greenhouse and just really got a green thumb and became really the plant bug really bit me then, and it just grew from there. So it was almost by accident. I did a little bit of farm work and my parents' garden, but it was never something that I was thought I could do for a living. And even when I was a kid, it was never encouraged to get into farming. It's different here, but kids who lived on farms, they're a little bit dirtier when they came into school, and all the kids made fun of them.
Oh, yeah.
And all
that. It was like that here when I was in school. Absolutely. You knew the kids who were FFA, I guess. Yeah, they were picked on. It was not considered a cool thing to be doing, and kids are brutal. So you took a road trip
and did some woofing, and then
and you should explain what woofing is.
It's an acronym that stands for Willing Workers on Organic Farms. And so I worked a couple weeks on all different farms from Washington down to New Mexico, and really liked Sonoma County. So driving south from Washington and hitting these rolling hills in Sonoma County, I really felt a connection and wanted to stay here. And basically started as a hobby. I basically said I'm either going to have a lot of veggies to share with my friends, or maybe people will want to buy them. And so it all started with one person saying, hey, can I give you $10 a week and you can make me a bag of lettuce? And so it started with a one person CSA and kind of evolved naturally from there.
And you know, you don't do CSAs now though, do you?
Well, we have what we call an inner circle CSA just for crew.
You can see me getting excited.
If you ever want to stop by the farm, we can definitely give you a lot of stuff that we don't take to market. So we have a full array of of veggies, but we do it in small amounts. So we have greenhouse tomatoes, mini cucumbers, cabbage, strawberries, raspberries, but it's more for us and friends. Sure. And
well, I was thinking of just, you know, your salad mix CSA without thinking about it. And I know that me and my big mouth, there have been many times I haven't been able to get what I wanted because people I've told about it come to the market before I do and buy it out from under me. But that's been happening to me ever since I started writing about the farms of Sonoma County. And on that note, I think it is time for more music here on Mouthful. It's Mouthful. My guest this evening, George Macros, or Farmer George of Earthworker Farm, and also Chelsea Cushman, also of Earthworker Farm. So, Chelsea, you're working towards being a dietitian.
Correct.
How are you doing that? What's your
approach? Currently in the DTR program at the JC. Mm-hmm. It's a dietetic technician. Mm-hmm. And I've also done a lot of studies on my own. I have eliminated, my mom was actually diagnosed with celiacs about 8 years ago, and so that's when everything really started to shift for me. Just cutting out wheat just became this snowball effect, and realizing most of the main cash crops, corn, soy, and wheat, processed together and are really common allergen. So I do a lot of study on my own, and I also studied at the Dhyana Center, the Ayurvedic clinical course. Mm-hmm. So I got a good introduction to Ayurvedic nutrition and herbs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't understand Ayurveda. I don't know that much about how Ayurvedic thinks. I know more about how, say, Chinese
similar
herbology.
They're elemental.
Mm-hmm.
It's really just based on elements, ether, air, fire, water, and earth. Mm-hmm. Chinese is different a little bit. They have
little bit
wood
different.
And metal.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really just elementally based. They feed into each other, create kind of a circle, a cycle, and you can break down foods into whether they have a preponderance of more of one element than another. Like with the Dr. Seuss, it's mainly bok choy, which is very cooling. I mean, greens are alkalinizing to begin with, but there's some that are more alkalinizing than others. So the bok choy is one that's a great summer green, good for cooling.
And then what about the colors? Because your mixes are very, there seems there's a huge emphasis on color.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the basics in nutrition, I remember walking into one of my classes and there's a big poster that says eat color. Mm-hmm. And even though the flowers, you know, you'd have to eat like a pound of calendula to really get that anti-inflammatory effect that it has. Mm-hmm. But just seeing the color on your plate, to me, is color medicine. It's vibrational, you know, it's more of a vibrational energy. Just seeing such a beautiful plate really just inspires people. There's so many people who I know who have started eating salads because they have flowers in there and they have that color, and it just really catches our eye, you know. Mm-hmm. See something shiny or colorful, we are drawn to it.
We're all mud pies at heart.
Yeah.
Have you met any resistance to it?
I wouldn't say really resistance. There's some people who do prefer to have less flowers or no flowers because mm-hmm. they really just love the greens. Mm-hmm. But once in a blue moon that mm-hmm. somebody doesn't really want flowers. Most mm-hmm. everybody is just drawn right to the booth because mm-hmm. they see so much color.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting the way it ebbs and flows, because when edible flowers really started coming back into fashion, I guess you could say, in the 80s and early 90s, there was resistance. I remember one student of mine at the JC wrote a paper about, we would visit, one of the classes I taught, we would visit farms and that sort of thing, mm-hmm. and can't do it so much anymore because of traffic. It was mm-hmm. much different then. But her husband would make fun of the salad. And he says, I'm not eating lace curtains. And so there was resistance in that way. But if you go back, I have a book on flower cookery, I think it's called. I think it was published maybe in the 30s. I'm not sure.
Wow.
So you see it. I mean, it felt in the 80s like a new discovery, but it's actually been, you know, it rises and falls in popularity. And I think it was inevitable once people started thinking, oh yeah, we need to grow our own food. I think it was inevitable that we would start seeing this connection. And it's really beautiful. I love it. But I want you to say a little bit more about how you see it impacting health. The vibrational element, for people who don't necessarily think on that level a lot.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's explain that to them a little, because I'm totally with you on it. But let's explain a little bit more.
Well, I mean, like I said, they all have a different flavor, too.
It's yes, absolutely.
Like, the sage has a nice fruity flavor to it. The nasturtiums are sweet and spicy. The calendulas, it can be cooling. And there's some that are tangy. So I don't really know how to explain it in a different way. I think it's just, it really appeals to the senses. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't get a ton of physical medicine from just eating a couple petals, but mm-hmm. Just the color in and of itself is stimulating mm-hmm. to the yeah. senses.
And if you do this every day, mm-hmm. so if you eat from one of your salad mixes every day for a year, you're getting a huge diversity of micronutrients.
Absolutely,
huge,
yeah.
Because the way you feed the soil and then just the different plants that grow throughout the year. And then just, this is a little bag, it probably weighs 4 ounces or so, 4 or 5 ounces?
It's about 2 to 3 ounces, maybe.
Oh, okay. How many different species of plants do you think are in here? 20 maybe?
Could be 20 to 30? 25. Uh-huh. And I'd also just like to piggyback on what Chelsea was saying about the health. These aren't just for eating salads by themselves. They also, in general, make eating any type of vegetables or food more interesting. Mm-hmm. And so this bag right here could be spread out over several meals. And mm-hmm. so, in general, these colors encourage people to eat more salads. And that's, for me, I wasn't a big salad eater before I knew about these colors, and it's just changes the experience. So mm-hmm. basically this is a way to facilitate a lot more healthy eating for a lot of people because it makes it more colorful and interesting and a work of art on the plate. And so there's a huge psychological component just in terms of kind of catalyzing more healthy eating with the flowers and the artisan mix. And I also like to consider these a little whimsical too, so they kind of make me
with names like that, of course. And you know, when you say a work of art on the plate, a lot of people will immediately think of fussy chefs, you know, and foam and all this other stuff. But this is a work of art on the plate that just comes straight from the earth and the farmer. So it's very different. And one of the things I like to do with, and I do this with all kinds of lettuce, but your mixes particularly, and yours are definitely the most beautiful, can use them as a bed for other foods.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I happen to love really good fried flat or sautéed flatfish, whether it's flounder or sand dabs, if you can find them, anything like that. And if you just put a nice big handful or two of this on the plate, and then you cook your fish, and you just make a pan sauce or a really simple vinaigrette and put that on top. Mm-hmm. You need no salad dressing. All of the nice juiciness from the fish and from the pan
Absolutely.
Sauce or the vinaigrette just goes down into the greens and flowers. And then mm-hmm. you have a dinner that's ready in about 12 minutes. And it's, you know, my grandson who's living with me right now, he loves it. He just loves it. And
sounds delicious.
And it's so easy. And it's so basic. And so earthy. And another thing, if you happen to be a vegetarian, you can do the exact same thing by grilling zucchini. And this is the time of year to grill zucchini. And mm-hmm. I love grill it, cut it lengthwise, mm-hmm. and you know maybe put a little cumin on it and salt and pepper, and mm-hmm. grill it until it's just tender but not mushy. Put it on top of the salad mix, little lemon juice. Again, dinner doesn't take very long.
Exactly.
Something I wanted to ask you about before, and I didn't because we started talking more about cilantro. Talk to me about the leek grass.
Leek grass?
Because I love your wheat grass. I could just like sit and nibble on a bag of your leek grass.
Thank you. It's basically leek seeds.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of funny because I get them from a small mom and pop organic farm in Nebraska, and they call them leeks, but they're really onions. But it's almost kind of an inside joke to call them leeks, and that's what they sell them as. But I think they're onions.
If you left them in the, have you left any in the ground?
Yeah, they make bulbs like onions.
Oh, they make onions. Okay.
I'm 99% sure that they're not leeks, but that's what they're sold as. And basically they're sown in the ground just like I described with the cilantro. I make furrows with a homemade furrowing tool and scatter them into the furrows, rake them up, and then I'll harvest them in two different types of ways. Sometimes I'll actually grab little handfuls and pull up the whole plant, almost like a bunching onion, roots and all, with the buried part that's blanched and the top part that's green, or I'll just cut it with a knife, and mm-hmm. those are the two different styles that I do. So sometimes I'll actually be grabbing little handfuls and just plucking them.
Mm-hmm. They're really your spicy mix when it has the leek grass in it. It's just so good. I hate to choose favorites, but I have to say that is my hands down favorite salad mix. It's fabulous. In and out of my head. You live where you farm now, right?
I do.
You
yes.
live up there. And do you grow? Do you have any? Do you raise any critters or anything? Do you have any chickens other than your bees?
Just bees and worms. We've got a bee and worm ranch.
Okay. So, and bees, of course, are categorized livestock in mm-hmm. California, something that I love and love telling people. Oh, yes, I have 10 million head of livestock.
Yeah.
They're bees, but still. And this is your full-time endeavor. You
it
make
is,
a
yes.
living, which is just fabulous. You make a living.
I do, yeah. I've never taken out any loans. I've basically, it's all sweat equity.
Mm-hmm.
The farm just grew organically and with people's support, and being able to grow a product that that I believe in, it's grown to this level, and I'm very grateful to be there, and to have Chelsea by my side working with me, and just an amazing customer base. I mean, this is an amazing place to farm, and this is also from what I think the best time in history to be a farmer ever. If you look at farmers throughout history, I mean, the fact that we're actually here at a time where we're respected and given fair prices for our produce is to me historically unprecedented.
Mm-hmm.
So
you have an optimistic view of where things are going right now for small farmers.
I do.
Which is a great thing.
There's
we need more optimists on,
yeah,
on this level. I am too. But what you read in the paper all the time, how fast small farmers are disappearing. There aren't going to be any small farmers. Monsanto and what's the other company are getting married, and they're going to own all the food in the world. And so it's really great to have something that's this tangible, this beautiful, and has this, you know, optimistic dedication behind it.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, it doesn't go without challenges. And one of the biggest challenges is the fact that In the last 50 years or so, we've had thousands of years of collective wisdom that we've just been detached from, like all of these generations of wisdom passed down, basically severed. And so I feel like one of the main challenges is the fact that small-scale, sustainable, and organic farmers, we're basically having to teach ourselves something. It's very different from a lot of other fields where you can go to school for it and learn a model. Like, I've had to develop all my own practices by trial and error and some inspiration and learning from others. But really, that to me is one of the biggest challenges, is it's a whole new, we're reviving a lost form of knowledge.
Mm-hmm. Do you see yourself at some point passing this knowledge on to other young farmers who are inspired by what you do?
I do a little bit. I mean, mm-hmm. anybody, we have a part-time crew, and it's all education, basically.
Mm-hmm.
The performance of the crew and other earth workers, the extent of their performance is the extent of our education and training. And mm-hmm. so we are actively educating.
Okay, great. Now, one thing, this is not really off topic, but just a tiny bit. Let's talk a little bit about ceramic knives.
Okay.
Do you have a brand of ceramic knife that you like, a source for them, for people who are interested either for using them in their garden or using them in their kitchen, especially when you're eating a heavily plant-based diet? It's really great to have one or two good ceramic knives. So what do you recommend?
I use Kyocera. Mm-hmm. If I'm pronouncing it correctly, and they have a lot of different types of knives, and also for personal use, we have Kyocera mandolins, and like one flat bit, like
the mandoline?
Yeah, mandoline.
Oh, uh-huh.
So one that makes little like julienne slices, and one that just makes thin slices,
mm-hmm.
And that I really recommend for home cooks.
Where did you get that? I hadn't seen the mandolines.
I got those at Cultivate Home in
Oh, Cultivate Home.
Sebastopol.
Excellent. Excellent. I have missed that. I love that store. Cultivate Home. There you go, right in downtown Sebastopol.
It's a fun place to just walk around and get inspired about new equipment.
Yeah, and it's so great that it's going to continue to be there.
Absolutely.
Okay, and on that note, we are just about out of time, aren't we, Kirby? Getting close. So it is George Macros of Earthworker Farm. I believe your website is farmerg.com.
Yes.
Because if you go to farmergeorge.com, you end up with a guy in Davis who raises Mangalista pigs.
Oh.
And I'm looking, thinking, and from a distance, it's like, this is... Well, I guess that could be George. Wait a minute. I didn't know George was raising pigs. And then I looked at the contact and it was Davis. And I was like, oh, it's not Farmer George. But that Farmer George looks like a good guy, too. And you will find Earthworker Farm at the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market at the LBC, is it LBC yet?
Yes.
Parking lot on Saturdays from 8:30 until 1, mm-hmm. and then in Sebastopol on Sundays, officially opens at 10 o'clock, but if you wait until 10, you might miss out. So shoppers start showing up there around 8:30, and that market goes until 1:30, but George is often sold out before then.
We're working on that.
So, Chelsea Cushman, George Macros, thank you so much for taking time on Sunday. I know you're busy. I really appreciate you driving down here.
Thanks for having us.
You bet. And thanks to you for tuning in for another episode of Mouthful, Smart Talk about Food, Wine, and Farming here on KRCB. Next week, I will be talking with Christopher Sawyer, who is a master sommelier, can talk about probably any single wine in the world. So we will have some fun next week on Mouthful here on KRCB Radio 91.
Grapes are covering the grassland. They're buying up for family farms. Selling out, who can blame them? Why?